Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Slow Burn Media, an evergreen podcast, presents Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless. Hello and welcome to episode 139 of Who Killed? I'm your host, Bill Huffman, and this is a Slow Burn Media and Evergreen Podcast production. On this week's show, we are going to wrap up my conversation with Nick about the missing persons case out of Kent State from 1978, which involves one Judy Martins, who was from Avon Lake, Ohio, which is a suburb located not too far from where this podcast is produced. And in the conclusion of this episode, we talk about who may be involved and what processes may need to be taken to get the answers for the family that remains looking for Judy. So join me and Nick for part two and the conclusion of Judy Martins is Missing. When you don't have any answers in this particular case, it's just awful. I mean, her father passed away from cancer at a very young age. Her mom passed away at a young age. When you go through these types of tragedies as a family, it definitely takes more out of you than just, you know, I mean, it's a tragedy for the whole family and everyone involved, family and friends. And, you know, I feel like Judy's case would have been so much, if it happened today, we wouldn't, I say this all the time, you know, because it's revisionist history, but if we had the technology today that we have, you know, if we had the technology that we have today back then there's no way that this case would be unsolved. I mean, there would have been cameras, recording, somebody would have noticed something. I also think that in this world that we live in, as far as the true crime world, which has become much more popular in the last, you know, few decades, it wasn't really a big thing in 1978 to be aware of what to look out for. And a lot of listeners and a lot of the people that I've talked to why they listen to true crime, a lot of them come back to me and they say, well, it's nice to know to kind of what to look out for. And in Judy's case, you know, there probably wasn't as much information on stranger danger and that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm just totally speculating on that aspect of it. But it just seems like a more innocent time period, 1978, than 2021, which doesn't sound necessarily right, but I feel like there's much more awareness today than there would have been on May 23rd, 1978.
Well, and again, I just want to kind of point out that week for everybody because it adds to the conflict of solving this case and the conflict of finding her and putting together a good suspect list, right? Because they had a decent suspect list, but you're reaching a little bit for people that when you review the suspect list that they were working with early on, it's pretty much the former boyfriend and that's it. And so the 23rd is a Tuesday. They party, they have a good time. As the story goes, she goes missing at 2 a.m., 2:30 a.m., walking home in the dark by herself, short walk. That's Wednesday, early Wednesday. She's not reported missing until 4:35 p.m. on Friday. They're breaking for a holiday weekend. Do you think anybody's actively searching for a missing college kid who they get these reports almost daily or a couple a week? And that's no stretch there. I'll pull up an exact quote from the Kent State Police Chief here in a second. I'll try to find it while we're talking through this. But think about that, how that screwed up this investigation, even on the local level, where we're not putting a high probability of Kent State solving this thing anyway. But then let's add in the factor of she's missing for 2 days, then finally reported missing. And by the time she's reported missing, it's practically 5 p.m. on a Friday, on a holiday weekend. Kids are going home. The big issue also becomes, has anybody seen her? Oh, well, who does she hang out with? Well, she hangs out with Bill, and she hangs out with Nick, and she hangs out with so-and-so. Well, Bill has gone home for the holiday weekend. Nick left yesterday, and so-and-so is getting ready to leave now. And so this is 1978. And as you pointed out, had technology been what it is today, it would be a different story. When Bill left school on that Friday, and when Nick left school on that Thursday, they almost became impossible to get a hold of until they came back. And now, you know, memories fade even just after a couple days. And, so that is one big part of the problem for this case. Now, Kent State Police Chief Robert Malone said this is the only case we had at Kent State of a missing person who could not be accounted for. I know it's the only one since 1973 when I came on board. With 17,000 students, we get a lot of missing persons reports here, but there always seems to be an explanation. So this is from that article that came out about 4 years after, 4 or 5 years after Judy went missing. So he was not the Kent State Police Chief at the time that she went missing, but he started working there in 1973. So this is approximately 82 or 83 by the time he's doing this interview. And he's saying in a 9-10 year time period, she's the only one that we've never had a reasonable explanation for, that we couldn't come up with finding her relatively quickly. Somewhere in when we covered it, and my notes are pretty extensive in this case, so I'm having a hard time sifting through them here, Bill, and I apologize, but somewhere in our coverage of it on True Crime Garage, I did have the exact quote of where he said approximately how many people they get reported missing each week at that time. But the thing here is, this has all the makings for a good crime novel, a good mystery novel, right? Beautiful young woman goes missing in the middle of the night, walking home by herself. Years later, the strange sighting of possibly she's relocated, and this down on her luck person comes into the picture, and it's a possible match, and it could be her, but it's not, ends up not being her, and the mystery of the boyfriend, and then the serial killer comes into the fold years after the fact, where, oh, he was in the area and he's killed similar victims. So it has all the makings for a great mystery novel. The thing for me, though, Bill, is it's not a very, at the heart and core of this story, it's not that big of a mystery to me. And I think what adds to the confusion here is simply that story of she was last seen walking from dorm to dorm. And you are right. If we had technology back in 78 that we have today, this case would be solved. And why would it be solved? Two reasons. One, I don't believe you would have any camera footage of her walking from dorm A to dorm B. I don't think she left dorm A of her own free will that night. So when the story says she was last seen walking home from Dunbar Hall to Engelman Hall, that sounds good. It sounds good in the papers. It adds to the mystery. Who says they saw her walking home? No one. I've reviewed the police file. There is not a single person that says they witnessed her walking home. So I go, well, maybe she didn't even walk home. Maybe something happened to her before she could walk home that night. And therein lies the answer to your question and to solving this mystery. And I think the other thing that technology would show you, had they had it, somebody had to get her body out of that dorm at a Dunbar Hall. And there's a chance that it may have taken more than one person. And so while I do not believe that you would have seen video footage of her walking from dorm to dorm, I think you would have seen video footage of somebody moving something suspicious either that night or the next morning on the 24th. That's the other thing. If something terrible happened to this woman on the night of the 23rd or very early in the early hours of the 24th, nobody's looking for her until the 26th. Somebody had time to dispose of her body if something terrible happened to her. And the thing is, too, back then, from my understanding, from what I've been told by people that that have a good understanding of what the campus looked like in 78, is you go about 25 yards, 30 yards in one direction from Dunbar Hall, and you're in the woods. So somebody may not have had to go very far to dispose of her. And I'll tell you what, the answer to what happened to Judy Martins is in the timeline itself. The last individuals that saw her that night that were admittedly hanging out with her that night, there's four individuals. And I believe in my heart that one, if not two of them know, likely two of them is my guess. Because again, either I think maybe one person did something bad or two people did something bad. Or if we want to go back to just one, again, they may have had help getting rid of something later. So the four people in that timeline are the ones that you really want to look
at. Yeah, and especially with that beating a holiday weekend, nobody would be suspicious if they saw you carrying a big suitcase.
Carrying a big suitcase, and this sounds really sad, but I've heard from more than one person that on that campus in 78, it would not send off any alarm bells if you saw someone carrying a drunk person over their shoulder.
Honestly, I went to OU. She was at OU. I mean, these are like top party schools in the nation. You're absolutely right. It is something that would be weird now, but back then,
more than one individual told me that, and I, you know, it seems a little,
yeah.
I don't know how I would.
Sounds a little date rapey. Date rapey to me, but yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. I have a little doubt to that, but I've been told that by more than one individual. So if they believe it to be true, then it must be true on some level.
I mean, okay, they could have seen one person doing that at one point or another. And I mean, again, it's college. People get way too drunk and have no ability to walk sometimes. And that's just part of being a college student. My thought, and I think I fall in the same category as you, is that she most likely never left that dorm, because there's no specific sighting of her leaving a door. You know, she exited out of the east door of Dunbar Hall. You know, usually you see that type of description when somebody's been seen leaving somewhere. So I would say that's a red flag in the research that I've uncovered. And that, yeah, those last four people that saw her, you know, what kind of nefarious thing could have happened? Anybody's guess. And it's not fair for us to speculate, but something clearly bad happened to Judy, and the people that were with her most likely do know where she is, or, you know, what they had done with her or what had happened to her on that night. Mm-hmm. It just makes no sense that she would disappear in 150 or 200 yards. It just, again, like you said, nobody saw her.
Nobody saw her leaving. Nobody saw her make that walk or even walk out that dorm door. No witness at any time ever says that they even see her, you know, like making their way out of the dorm building itself. Mm-hmm.
That's where I see a big problem.
The way that the story goes is that she vanished somewhere between Dunbar Hall and Engelman Hall. The genesis of that story is the last two individuals that saw her, that she was hanging out with. They say, well, yeah, she left here at such and such time and said that she was walking home. That's the genesis of that story. And what's been told for 40 years is that she disappeared walking alone in the dark in the middle of the night. Well, show me in a police file this thick, not one witness that says I witnessed her. She looked like she was leaving the dorm. I didn't see her step out, but she looked like she was leaving Dunbar Hall. And no one says I witnessed her walking from Dunbar to Engelman or anywhere else. So, until you can find that person, I believe that the answer lies inside Dunbar Hall and in the last individuals that saw her that night between the hours of 11 p.m. and let's go ahead and go 2:30 a.m. because that's the time that these persons say in the police file. But it's the answers to this one. It's interesting because there's all these little interesting nuggets and pieces to the story that make it larger than what it probably should be. And it's a very simple case to me when I review this one.
So basically we have Judy. She goes out partying, assuming she's partying, mm-hmm. hanging out with friends, doing whatever. Don't know the exact specifics, but what was the timeline from that night?
So it's more of like a celebration for Miss Martins that night. She is going to go out to dinner with friends. And then after dinner with her friends, she goes back to her dorm room and her, you know, her friends' dorms, which these are female friends. So right now she's still in Engelman Hall, right? And at some point she decides to make the walk to Dunbar Hall. So at approximately 11 p.m., she leaves her friend Robin's room in Engelman Hall dorm. She tells her that she is going to see Charles Nevels. Now, Charles Nevels lives in Dunbar Hall, and this is a well-known, well-liked guy. Robin knows him. Her other friends know him. He seems like he might have been a bit of a catch back then. I don't know if there was any kind of relationship going on between him or any of these other girls. But anyway, she states that at 11 p.m. approximately that she's leaving her Engelman Hall to go to Dunbar Hall with the expectation of seeing Charles Nevels. Okay. So she arrives at 2:33 Dunbar Hall, stays there with Charles Nevels and John Beckany. This is in John's room. And these are all according to statements that these witnesses gave to police at one time or another. Judy there removes the wig, sunglasses, and trench coat that she was wearing. Again, she's out celebrating, having a good time. Right around 11 p.m. approximately, this is per Kevin Greer, another witness for the night, says that Judy stops by to see if Bernie Caffrey is home or at his dorm, but he is not. So she talks to Bernie's roommate, Leo Robe, for a minute and then goes to Charles Neville's room again. Leo Robe says that Judy was dressed, quote,
"Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Like a hooker.
Let's hear from this week's sponsor, Best Fiends. It's great getting back to normal as we head into fall. I know I'll be working in the yard and hitting my favorite fall festivities. One thing I know for sure is I'll be diving into Best Fiends on my phone. Since true crime research calls for a mental break, Best Fiends has become my go-to. Clearly, I love to solve puzzles, and Best Fiends offers me a new challenge every day. Best Fiends is way more fun than any other matching puzzle game out there. It's also one of those games that makes time fly, and it's totally free to download. One of the coolest parts about Best Fiends is there's something new going on all the time. Whether it's a new challenge, more levels, a fun monthly event, or new characters. I am cruising through these levels, and that's pretty much a sign that anyone can play. I've discovered that moving through these puzzle levels is also a mindful experience. Plus, collecting all those different characters is another reason that I turn to Best Fiends for a challenge. If you're tired of the same old puzzle games, this game is for you. If you don't have a favorite character yet, give Temper a try. He's small but mighty. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on this game. So join me and millions of people who are already playing this fun puzzle game. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play today. That's Friends, without the R, Best Fiends.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal.
Let's hear from this week's sponsor, BetterHelp.com. We may have moved past 2020, but 2021 is still looking fairly grim. But today I'm happy to tell you about BetterHelp.com. Because if there's anything holding you back or interfering with your happiness, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. You can connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. And it's really convenient because in this current state that we live in, it just has to be. So now you can get help on your own time at your own pace. All you have to do is schedule a secure video or phone session, or you can chat and text with your therapist. BetterHelp really is there for you. They have over 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states. And if, for whatever reason, you aren't happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time. So if you're suffering from depression or anxiety, stress, anger, relationship issues, heck, you're not getting a good night's sleep, or have LGBT matters, or just low self-esteem, they literally have a licensed professional counselor for you. And of course, everything you share is confidential. The thing I like the most is it's actually affordable. And Who Killed listeners get 10% off their first month with the discount code WHO. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/WHO. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs, and then you get matched with a counselor you'll love. Again, for 10% off, go to betterhelp.com/WHO.
At approximately midnight, John Beckany knocks on Charles Neville's door. He and a friend are going to the local 7-Eleven, going to walk over to the 7-Eleven. And John Beckany returns the wig, sunglasses, and trench coat to Judy at that time. So she left these items in his dorm room because she went over to see Charles. They're going to the 7-Eleven, probably just drop by and say, hey, do you want to go with us? No, don't want to go. Okay, here's your items back that you left in my dorm. John Beckany's statement to police is that Judy is in good mental and physical condition at this time. Now, May 24th, 1978, at approximately 2:30 a.m., Charles Neville says that this is the time that Judy leaves his room and that her intentions are to walk home. So we've just referenced four or five individuals that saw her in the hours between 11 p.m. and maybe up to 2:30 a.m. Again, I don't love that 2:30 a.m. time because we're getting that from witnesses that I think should be suspects. So I think the key time frame is 11 p.m. and onward. Something happened after 11 p.m. Something happened after she went to Dunbar Hall. And I am not very confident that she walked out of Dunbar Hall.
That is a timeline that is definitely disconcerting if you're anybody related to Judy or her friends, because it definitely sounds like whatever happened in that last, from midnight to 2:30 in the morning or whatever that is.
Right, and between some of those individuals that I've mentioned there that I named in that timeline of that night, there's been some very minor discrepancies in their stories throughout the years. Again, memories fade. We're human beings. We make mistakes. We forget things. That's all well and good, but there are also some inconsistencies in the stories. And we're talking about not being questioned 40 years later, months later. I think that your answer lies somewhere within the four or five individuals that we just named.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that we run into when you have somebody who, or multiple people who are complicit in a crime. You know, they, I guess if two people know, they're kind of each supporting each other on not sharing what they know, but maybe when one passes away, maybe they'll give in. But it doesn't seem like this should be that hard of a case to solve, in my opinion. It seems like a case that just was screwed from the start. And that's basically, you had so many days to clean up a crime scene, if there was a crime scene, if there was blood, if there was this, that, or the other. And again, there was no sign of a struggle at her dorm, so the police didn't have any reason to suspect foul play. Yes, there's a missing persons, but again, it's 1978 and people do go missing. And that is by their own choice in most cases. So at the end of the day, I'm sitting here looking at a case that, yes, it seems very cut and dry that something happened with those four or five individuals, but why there hasn't been any action, I think, stems from the fact that they don't have any physical evidence to prove that a crime was committed. And, of course, they don't have a body. So, you know, it's what do they have? I mean, it all sounds really good. Like you mentioned the timeline. It sounds great for the papers. And this all does sound good too, but it's just like they just don't, it doesn't sound like they have enough to bring any charges unless somebody just finally decides to confess.
Well, and like I pointed out, it only takes one or two individuals in this timeline to be lying for the fact that she didn't leave, that she didn't make that walk. You know, this timeline, if we are to believe every individual and they're telling the 100% truth in this timeline, then she should have left. And in my mind, she should have made it back to her dorm. So there's at least one individual in this group that is lying. Who is it? I don't know. I just don't. I can't say because I don't know. And if it's two people that are lying, that is where it gets even more complex for your investigation. And in the early goings of this case, they were not investigating a homicide. They were investigating a missing persons case. They were really thinking that they were going to find her alive and well somewhere, that this was just a misunderstanding. And the only misunderstanding I see here is with believing all of these guys' stories.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that if they took these guys' stories at face value, then they didn't have any reason to continue looking into them at that time. The case seems more dramatic than what it should be. I mean, this wouldn't be something, I think, today that we would be talking about 40 years from now. I just don't think that would be the case. And another thing about technology is all the dorms now have scanner cards. So you would have had a time in or a time out, you know, for at least for, like, let's say these individuals did have something to do with her disappearance and they did dispose of her body. They would have at least, if it happened today, let's say they did avoid cameras and all that other stuff, there would still be that one thing, like, oh, I don't know, cell phone locations or, you know, just geo-tracking information. But again, the when they come back to the dorm, oh, well, can you explain why you were gone from 2:30 to 4:30 a.m.? You know, it's right. Just like, I know we always talk about technology and we always are waiting for technology to catch up, but in this case, unfortunately, it was a disadvantage, and I don't think it should be this difficult, but they need to find the body. And if it's 40 years, man, I mean, what are your thoughts about where this body could possibly be?
Well, I was just going to say, I'm a little surprised with the development of that immediate area and just the development in general over time that she's not been discovered by accident. But that's the key here that we need to point out and remind everyone is just that. One, they need, I really feel, Bill, and I can't say this with 100% certainty, but the vibes I was getting from the U.S. Marshals was that this case is really teetering on finding those remains. If they can find her remains, that we might have a case here. We might have arrest or arrests that follow shortly afterwards. So, you know, one thing that's key that we need to point out here is that it is an active investigation, even though it's been 40 years. The U.S. Marshals are highly invested in this investigation and finding who is responsible or the parties that are responsible. And any information should be, we don't need to send it to Kent State. We don't need to send it to Avon Lake. We need to go right to the source so good information does not get lost. If anybody has any information in the Judy Martin's case, please, please, please reach out to the U.S. Marshals. And the best number to get a hold of them would be 1-866-4-WANTED, which is 1-866-4-926-833. Bill, if you would allow me just a few more minutes of your time here, I have another missing persons case that I'm hoping to bring some more awareness to, and this is in your area, so I know your listeners will be could be helpful with any information in this one. So Paige Coffey has been missing since Wednesday, May 1st, 2019. And there's some conflicting stories on the last time that she was seen. So let's just kind of put that as a roundabout, but that's generally believed to be the last time that anybody saw Paige Coffey alive and well. She's been missing from Brightonall.
It's Brattonall. Right? It's Brattonall,
Ohio.
It's the fanciest, got the biggest houses in the city.
Well, she was 27 years old at the time of her disappearance. She's 5'8" tall, 230 pounds, female, African-American, brown hair, brown eyes. I've met some of her family. Absolutely wonderful people. They are heartbroken. They're trying to do anything they can to figure out where Paige Coffey may be or what may have happened to her. The Brattonall Police Department and the Cleveland Family Center for Missing Children and Adults need your help locating this missing female. Again, 27 years old. Paige Coffey was last seen May 1st, 2019. Family members fear Paige may be in danger due to a change in mental status. Paige has ties to South Euclid, Macedonia, Oakwood, and Copley. Copley areas. Anyone who has seen Paige or anyone who may have any information as to her whereabouts, please contact the Brattonall Police Department at 216-681-1234 or the Cleveland Family Center at 216-255-8164.
Well, I think that that is a worthy couple minutes. I think that any unsolved case, especially when you're involved with the parents and you've met them and on a personal level, I think it becomes much more, you know, you want to see resolution. I know I felt that way after I met Mark Mihaljevic. And again, this will come out, obviously, after the 32-year anniversary of 10-year-old Amy Mihaljevic's abduction and disappearance and murder. And again, that case remains unsolved too. So we do these shows for a reason, and some of it is for the hope that people will one day come forward with the right information and these communities can put these cases behind them and let these families start to rebuild their lives, because again, it doesn't just impact one family. It impacts the whole, you know, it's like a spider web. You know, it starts in the middle and just expands out. And, you know, the sooner they get the answers, the better.
And sorry, with the Page Coffee investigation missing persons case that we just talked about, I know that the FBI has recently become involved in this investigation. And so really, when I'm asking everybody for help, it's not just like, do you think that you've seen Paige recently, or do you think that you know her whereabouts of late? They're also really trying to fill out the timeline around her disappearance. So if anybody can think back and recall something from that May 1st date, just before, just after, maybe something they witnessed that they thought was strange in that general area, they're looking to fill out the timeline, because look, we just talked about Judy Martin's case. Look how important the timeline of her disappearance is in that case. And so, when you have somebody that you're looking for, someone that's gone lost, gone missing, it's really key that they have good information and have a good timeline to work off of. Because if you don't have that, you don't have any real leads at all. And again, Judy Martin's case, the story has always been she disappeared in the middle of the night, walking the streets in the dark alone. That's no timeline at all. And when you really start to look at the timeline and the events of the 23rd, you start to get a much clearer picture of what probably happened in the Martin's case.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a good message to put out there. And it's important for people just to be conscientious of their surroundings, and I hate to remind people to be safe and stuff like that, but you know, you do have to be aware, and if you see something that doesn't seem right, you know, jot down a license plate if you can, or you know, I try to tell people, if you see something that doesn't feel right, do your best to maybe take a note. I mean, I'm not trying to put people in danger. I don't want people to like pull out their cameras and start taking video, but if you're able to do so in a safe environment, we've seen it with, you know, the George Floyd case, obviously, you know, without that cell phone video, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in. And again, it's important for innocent bystanders to basically stand up and be like, hey, no, don't do that. Don't, you know, if you see somebody being taken, dragged away or thrown over the shoulder, like we talked about earlier in the episode, in this day and age, that's not acceptable. So if you see that, step in, at least find somebody of authority that can step in. I'm just saying, you can be diligent and not just be some innocent bystander who just stands by and doesn't do anything. I mean, it's just, you can be more of a better, you can be a better person by providing information to the police than just ignoring it. And I know that sounds stupid, but so many people just turn the other way. And it's a shame, because a lot of these crimes could probably be solved if these people stepped forward.
And when we talk about being a better person or better people, there are few better people than than Bill Huffman, who had me on his wonderful show today. I want to thank you again, Bill, for allowing me to come on, and thank your audience for putting up with me for another stay. And I hope they'll have me back. And go Browns, right? Browns are 4-3. I guess 5-2 is the leader in the whole AFC right now. So there's still hope, still lots of hope.
Yeah, I mean, Baker's injury is a little bit concerning, but you know, I at least was comfortable seeing Case perform dutifully. I mean, he just did his job, and that was really all he needs. And we'll have Chubb back on, so hopefully it all works out. But yes, having you on the show is always a pleasure. I know you're a huge Browns fan, and we always have to throw in a little Browns thing at the end there. So with their hopes still alive for a great season, I mean, they still have 10 games left. So, because remember, this is a 17-game season. And, yeah, let's hope for the best. And, Nick, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And thank you so much for taking a significant amount of your morning to spend time with me and to share your knowledge on the Judy Martins case, because I believe it is something that you are very knowledgeable about. And I think the timeline that you laid out really does a great job of kind of putting it where it should be and who may be responsible. So thank you.
And thanks again, Bill. Thank you. And thank your wonderful, beautiful audience for allowing me in here again. Hey, if you haven't already, check out True Crime Garage Podcast. We're a weekly podcast, and we're almost as good as Who Killed. So check us out. We're available everywhere. Thanks again, Bill. Take care, buddy.
You bet. Thanks, Nick. Thank you so much to Nick of the True Crime Garage Podcast for joining me once again. Remember to check out their premium show, Off the Record, on the Stitcher app, as well as their entire backlog wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thank you again to this week's sponsor, Best Fiends. Download it today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Also, thank you to BetterHelp.com. You can save 10% with my promo code WHO. Most importantly, though, thank you all for listening. There wouldn't be a show without you guys. As you know, you can find new episodes of Who Killed every Friday wherever you get your favorite podcasts. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast and my other shows, you can help support this show via PayPal with my username at WilliamHuffman3 or via the Venmo app with my username at Bill-Huffman-3. Every contribution, big or small, does help keep these slow burn podcasts running. You can also help support the show by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Those 5 stars go a long way and help keeping the important cases that I cover in the spotlight. So if you'd like to stay up to date on the cases that I have covered, as well as the new shows I have in the pipeline, you can always follow me on Twitter at BillHuffman3. So thank you guys so much again for listening. Until next time, be healthy and stay safe.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Sean McCabe.
And I'm Carrie McCabe.
We are, well, married, obviously, but we're also obsessed with the darker side of things.
True crime stories, alien abductions, poltergeists. If it leaves you scratching your head and keeping those lights on at night, we want to hear about it.
That's why we host the podcast, Ain't It Scary, with Sean and Carrie.
Every week, we bring our listeners a true story guaranteed to send chills down your spine. From history's most brutal serial killers to the mystery of spontaneous human combustion.
Yep, lots of these stories leave unanswered questions behind, and you'll get to poke through the rubble of the evidence with a hardened skeptic and...
someone whose mind is more open to fun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
You can find Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie wherever you get your podcasts. And on social media at Ain't It Scary. Come play with us.